Howdy and welcome to River Talk, a podcast hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weiseth. This week, our big topic is paddling like a girl. But before we get to that, I'd like to start with some of the news of the week. So Zach is out this week with doing some other stuff. And so Priscilla, any news of the week you want to talk about?
We just had a big public lands package pass, which Zach, I'm sure, was going to talk a lot about. But basically what it does is it increases the miles of protected river in Oregon. There's a number of other cool parts about the public lands package. It protects the Molalla River, sections of the Rogue, the Devil's Staircase on Wilderness Area in Franklin and Wasson Creeks. So it's a pretty cool large public lands package, and really cool to see that move forward. I'm sure Zach, next week or next time we talk, will give a lot more details about that, since he worked a little more closely on that than I did. I do more of the state level stuff. Speaking about the state level stuff, there's an Oregon Outdoor Industry Bill, which is House Bill 3251, which enables Business Oregon to allocate or to award grants and loans to startup businesses in the outdoor industry, in the retail manufacturing side of things. So currently there's no dedicated money or grants specifically for the outdoor industry in Oregon. So this would be the first of its kind and really help small businesses in the outdoor industry that don't have the benefit of venture capital investments and other sorts of funds like that. So it's got broad bipartisan, bicameral, meaning both senators and representatives supporting it, and pretty much have representation for all the regions in Oregon for the bill.
It's exciting. So good stuff there. What? Anything else, Priscilla?
Not for me.
Okay. One of the, you know, kind of the big things that's on our mind up here in Idaho and certainly in Oregon is snowpack. We have lots of it. Like most places around, like I know here in Idaho, we're talking, but we ended February up 300% of normal for the month. You know, as far as the precipitation we actually had in February in Oregon, most places in Oregon are similar numbers. So we are looking at outstanding snowpacks. So all of those spring runoff kind of things that maybe run for a week could run for a month. We could see high water in places we haven't seen high water in a long time. It's going to be an awesome, awesome year for boating, which we're really excited about. So that is the news of the week that everybody's talking about. Great. So this week we have a guest to talk with us about paddling like a girl. So Priscilla, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, sure. So we have with us Will Howerton, a friend of mine and one of those people that you see on the river that always has a smile on his face, brings a lot of stoke to any group he's with. He also happens to be a kayak instructor, and we've had a lot of really good discussions about rowing technique and learning how to be a guide. So thought it would be great to hear from a kayak instructor's perspective a little bit about what he does and what he can recommend to paddlers that are starting out and looking to also just improve their overall skill set. So welcome, Will. Thanks for joining us. I am sure I did not give you a good enough introduction or background. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit more about yourself?
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. Super grateful. I'm really stoked to be here. A little background on myself is I started about 12 years ago running whitewater on the main Payette with my Uncle George and some other family members. Started out in a inflatable kayak.
Nice. And,
just basically got worked probably like three or four times the first day, and I just thought that was the funnest thing ever. And on whitewater ever since. And then a couple years later, I started working for the company Cascade Raft and Kayak out of Horseshoe Bend, Banks, Idaho. Started raft guiding with those guys. And then a couple years later, after watching all the North Fork boaters all the time, every afternoon, if you're not a kayaker, it's basically like an evening event just to go watch people go kayaking. So after a couple years, I started taking instruction from the Long family, and I was lucky enough. There were some really awesome kayakers there, like Andy McMurray, John McConville, and then a mutual friend of ours, Emily Meredith, who always brings a lot of stoke to kayaking as well. So those are the people that got me started.
Awesome. And how did you get into kayak instruction specifically?
I wanted better food.
Fair enough.
At the rafting company, at Cascade Rafting Kayak, if you are just a raft guide, you can get some pretty standard lunches, and those can get old really fast. And the kayak instructors get to order their lunch.
Oh, and wow.
I thought that that was super awesome and a great perk. And you didn't have to load big, heavy rafts all day. So after 1 year of kayaking, I was like just begging Chad Long to let me work with him. And so I started out doing the kids camps and worked my way up to private instruction, and even went to South America, worked with them down there. And also they run camps in California on the American River. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of the higher level camps that they do. I even did a few instruction classes with them on the North Fork Payette, which was super awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I know you've talked a little bit about like why you really enjoy teaching and how it gets you to know people a little better, and what, you know, learning what draws people to kayaking and what benefits they get out of it. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you kind of see as you teach different groups of students, like why people care about kayaking, what benefits it might give them, and why people are so excited about it?
Oh man. They're mostly excited about it at the start just because they didn't die and they had some pre-notion in their head that they were probably going to do that. Probably from a friend who was just too afraid to go take the lesson from the, with them as well.
Yeah.
So with the kids, it's super funny because at the top of the rapid, they can just be bawling their eyes out and you can just push them out of the eddy and they'll float down with you and they'll never flip over. And then they open their eyes at the bottom and they're upright like 9 times out of 10. And then they're like having this huge party and freaking out. They're like, what happened? Oh my God, that was awesome. And then as you get into a little bit older groups, then it becomes a huge deal, overcoming fears, learning a new skill, and, you know, controlling your emotions as well, because people, kayaking is counterintuitive to our everyday life. So people get tired really fast and they can get hungry, they can get cranky, they can get emotional. I mean, it ranges all over the place. Sometimes, you know, I've had plenty of people cry. I've had people freak out and cuss me out and drop everything and walk the rest of the way down the river. I mean, you just get a range of different things. But if they stick with it, the ability to learn such a different skill from everything in life, and your ability to focus in such a dynamic and moving environment, I think it should really be taught as like a main sport in high school and middle school. You know, I think it's much more dynamic than a team sport like football or baseball, basketball, things like that. And the benefits of kayaking, I think, are so much greater than what you get out of regular sports in school. And it's literally a lifetime sport. I mean, there's people like there's people running top to bottoms on the North Fork that are 65, 70 years old. I saw recently a picture of a 70-year-old running like some huge waterfall down in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, and even if you don't want to run the scary stuff or the tall stuff, you can always hop in a kayak or an inflatable kayak and just enjoy being on a river.
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah. And 70 to 80% of the people that are doing this sport are only running class three or smaller, you know, unless guided.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. That's, I mean, that's really where, that's where the crowd is at for sure, is class two, three.
Nice. And do you, in your instruction, do you only do hard shell kayaks, or do you sometimes use inflatable kayaks as a teaching tool? Because I know Eric and, well, I learned how to kayak starting out as an inflatable like you, and then Eric runs a business where we, and I used to work for him, we basically teach a lot of people through like 4 days how to navigate an inflatable kayak, and kind of those same things that you see is some people are really mad at you and they're yelling at you when they fall out, or some people are super stoked and like trying to fall out, which makes sometimes the guides not as happy, but it's like this really fun learning experience for everyone. And we, you know, we really enjoy teaching in the IKs, and for some people it seems like inflatable kayaks might be a good way for them to get over some of those fears, but maybe not. So I was just curious if you've taught a little bit of both, or if you just do the hard shells, and what the benefits and drawbacks of that might be.
There are tons of benefits, and with the development of inflatable kayaks, they are, I mean, there's inflatable kayaks out there that are just as good. After watching a few videos of your, of the Orange Torpedo kayaks last night, try one of those inflatable kayaks out.
Awesome.
I've also watched Jacob run his Stiletto a couple times, and that's a pretty sweet one. But I've had a lot of really good success with the Air Force inflatable kayak. I love that thing. I tell people all the time, it's faster than a kayak.
It's faster than
a hard shell. It boofs better, and you can roll it. So I mean,
oh dang, you can roll it. Is that the one where you tuck your legs in? It has kind of like a,
yeah,
a top thing.
Straps on it.
It's the one that literally, it looks like an inflatable creek boat.
Hard shell.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's it. It's all decked out, it's more or less. Like, it's, I've always thought that looked cool. I've never actually talked to anyone who'd paddled one, but I always thought it was kind of a neat looking design.
Yeah. And I can't remember if it was last summer or the summer before, they even came out with a prototype for kids.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Smaller one of those that I think, I haven't got to work with it, but I think it'd be incredible.
We have to get the air guys on here to talk about it.
Yeah.
That sounds seriously cool.
Yeah. And I know people that have taken it down the lower five. My favorite is like the canyon section with that thing is just a blast.
The canyon section in IKs is so fun. Like that. I prefer the canyon section in an IK. I think it's just, it's such a rad, like, it's like the perfect difficulty for inflatable kayaking. Totally doable, yep, but hard enough that like you don't want to be the person that falls out, because it's not like you just roll back up. Like, you know, you have to do the swim of shame sort of thing. Like, I love. Yeah.
And it can be a rough swim in there.
It can be. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I love inflatable kayaks and tandem kayaks as well. Those are sweet.
Yeah. Those are fun. AKA divorce boats or best friend boats.
Yep. Yeah. It's kind of like the Liquid Logic Gus. You either love it or hate it.
I've heard a few people say that.
Yep.
So I think moving on a little bit, I think one of the questions that I hear a lot just from friends who are trying to learn how to paddle, or I talk about with other, you know, people that run kayak instruction programs. So what are the biggest issues or, you know, surmountable problems that new paddlers have to overcome when they're learning how to be a good paddler, just because there's so much to learn, like from, you know, just navigating the boat to basic rescue stuff to what to wear when you're on the water. When you're teaching a brand new beginner, what are those biggest things that you might see them have to overcome, and what are some tips that you might have for them overcoming them?
Okay, so with this one, it's a little bit difficult because I kind of looked at this question in a couple different ways. Mm-hmm. Is there's, you know, beginners that come to me, but then there's also the beginners that are learning from their friends. Mm-hmm. And so that's a hard situation because you're going to have a lot of friends that are excited about you trying to kayak, and they're going to want to, you know, give all the information that they have to you. And coming from 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 different points of view, mm-hmm. it can be really hard. And so it's like trying to learn the offense of the, you know, Dolphins, the Packers.
We don't do sports analogies very well here, so
yeah. Come on, Will, ball sports.
I don't understand what you're saying.
You know, it's because you're not just getting one program. Then at that point, you're getting 5 different programs.
Yeah,
you know, and so that can be terribly hard as well. The next thing I think is, for skill set and learning to do that, it can be also, you know, hard to find a group to go with and stay with them as well. Mm-hmm. It's a very tight niche sport, and a lot of people are really particular about who they take on the river. Not everywhere, but sometimes it can be hard just to find people to go with.
Yeah.
I think that's especially true as you're a newer boater. Like, as you become a more competent boater, it's easier to find folks. But certainly, like, you see posts on PDX, you know, pretty regularly of, hey, I'm new, but, you know, I'm not really all that great. And a lot of times there's not – sometimes there's responses, like, people are going out that are similar, but then sometimes there's just, like, crickets to those folks, too. You know, yeah. People are always, I think, a little hesitant to take out people who admittedly or acknowledge that they may not stay in their boat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. If somebody says, oh, I paddle the little white, you know, they're going to get a response really fast almost every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, you want to go paddle like bobs to, or like fish to bobs? And I'm like a class 2 boater, 3 maybe. Like, not a whole lot of people are signing up for that one, I think. It is. I agree with you. It's harder to find those folks.
Absolutely. What else can be? What else do you guys see as a hindrance besides those two?
I think what you spoke to about too many friends teaching different things is something that I hear a lot. Is like, well, my friend said this, or like whether it's, you know, using a certain type of gear that is some guy's favorite or because they're sponsored by some company, and then having another friend say the opposite. Or telling, you know, people to, you know, you absolutely have to do this one thing on the river, and then another friend saying that you don't always have to do that, I think is frustrating and a hindrance for new paddlers. I also think on the rescue side and like the safety side of boating, you see a lot more opinions from paddlers, like intermediate to professional, about what you have to do and what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And they're often conflicting. So I think that also plays a role into people advancing their skill set because they're thinking about safety and like, oh, this one person said I absolutely cannot wear a tow tether, or this other person said I absolutely must, or, you know, those are just an obvious example of something where everybody has conflicting opinions about it. And I think that also applies into like paddling styles too. Like you absolutely must use a 30 degree feather paddle, or you absolutely must use a 0 degree feather paddle.
Nobody says that. Nobody.
Hey, I say use whatever works for you and whatever you can afford. You know what I mean? Like, you always have people saying you must do this or you must not do this. And it would be nice if, in the sport there was kind of a standard protocol, because I think other sports have that. And it's not as much of an opinionated thing when it comes to safety or technique or gear.
Do you feel like applying more of an international committee to some of this stuff would help, just like climbing? Because I've thought about that quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it's all – I've thought about this and I thought about that too. And I think really what it comes down to is we're in a part of growth in the sport where we still have a really small community, kind of like how climbing started out. And we're seeing a lot of exponential growth in whitewater paddling. And I think as soon as the community gets big enough to where it's like climbing or like mountain biking, which it more than likely will never be that big, but it'll get big enough to where like the standard ideas about things, there's so many people that think that way or have experienced that this is the best way to go about progressing in the sport, that it'll become more standardized. Because right now it's just a super small community, and the number of, you know, professional instructors and professional boaters is so small that, of course, they're all going to have their own opinions about it. There's just not enough of us.
Yeah. Well, I think that our new goal should just be to double or triple or quadruple the number of people that kayak then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Priscilla, to your point though, like at a base level, when it comes to like initial instruction, we do sort of have that standardization, like with the ACA.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
like,
true.
Like most of the places, if you're going to go sign up and you're going to take a intro to kayaking class, which I think my piece of advice to your question would be take a kayaking class. Don't let your friends teach you. Like you will be better faster if you go and pay somebody to teach you how to do it than have your friend who has no idea what they're doing try and teach you. And your friend may not talk to you by the time you're done, or you may not talk to your friend by the time you're done. So
that's true.
I decided after trying to teach you, Priscilla and Murray and those guys, like how to roll, that I was never going to try and teach another person in the rest of my life. And I've stuck to that since then. Like just do it. I don't know what you're doing wrong. Just stop sucking and do the thing. But,
I think you literally said that to me.
I think so. That's why you should pay people, right? But I do think at that base level, there's a pretty standardized methodology, from my understanding, on teaching the basics of kayaking, at least. So if you take that class, you should start off with, you know, a pretty reasonable idea of the same fundamentals of anyone else who takes it. Is that true?
Unfortunately, I have been around the ACA and I really don't like that program. And I was personally not taught the ACA program. I was taught something totally different that was developed by the Long family and is basically only taught there. And so that's something about taking lessons from me is I'm really different from what most people teach. And there's also other people that are teaching things, there's like Canadian instruction, there's the British Canoe Association you might run into, there's Knowles instructors I've run into that teach differently as well. ACA is definitely the most, well-known and the most practiced, but I mean, there's other methods out there as well.
I kind of appreciate that. That's been one of my biggest issues with the idea of like this standardization thing, is that there are so many good programs out there and there's so many different ways of teaching things based on where you are, what kind of boating you're talking about, all that stuff, that I kind of appreciate that diversity, you know, as long as somebody has a long history of doing it and being successful, like good for them. Right. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely. And I've talked to a lot of people about this and other instructors, and if I'm paddling my like 11, 12 foot long perception overflow from like the 80s. I'm going to paddle more like the ACA, because when that came about, when the ACA developed itself, the kayaks were huge, you know, and so it required a totally different technique. Has that technique changed much from their start till now? As far as I know of, it hasn't. Have the kayaks? Absolutely. Do we need a more updated style of kayaking? Is there more updated styles of teaching kayaking? Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah, I never thought about it in that way.
Yeah. And, I mean, they're kind of changing back a little bit now because we're getting all, like, the, you know, rippers and the stees and the party brap, the mullet. You know, we are going back a little bit old school, but we're definitely, I mean, there are the crossover kayaks. I guess those are pretty long, too. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, 9 foot is kind of the standard now. And they have so much rocker to them, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the style of creeks that people will ultimately run require a little bit different skill sets and more maybe like slalom type skills to get to small eddies and through interesting features. But also with a large boat, you have a lot of forgiveness. So you can see that play out as well. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think I've always thought that if I had had the opportunity, like a lot of the boaters say, like in the 80s and 90s, to do more play boating, because that was kind of in some ways a creek boat that people used, I would have been a lot better at kayaking, because I would have learned to be more comfortable being upside down, working out of holes and stuff like that. Do you think starting people out in play boats is a good way to teach them it more of those advanced skill sets, or how do you see that?
That's a tough one, because it's hard to keep their motivation when they keep calling and they keep swimming, even though the boat is like only 40 to 50 gallons and it's easy to like empty out and save.
It's tiring.
It's really tiring. And so you got to have somebody that really wants it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, it's like a higher, like it's a steeper learning curve, but you get good really fast.
Mm-hmm.
The drawbacks that I see with that, though, is you use a lot of horizontal. You get a lot of habit doing horizontal strokes more.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, when you're in a creek boat, you need a really good vertical stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Strokes that are more vertical. And so that can kind of be a, you know, drawback when you get to those creek boats. Where you learn in a creek boat, then it's, I feel like it's easier to transfer to a play boat.
Yeah.
And you can roll a creek boat, then rolling a play is insanely easy.
Where is the ability to roll in sort of your instruction priority? Like, you're taking a new person, if they do a 3-day class, you know, is rolling even part of that? Like, what is the focus on teaching rolling? Because that's one of the things I value about, you know, telling people you should start your kayaking career out in a play boat and surfing a lot, is that you're going to get to where you can roll. Like, you're going to be able to roll. And that's going to give you, you know, a lot more comfort and increase your learning curve everywhere else after that. You know, like if you dial in rolling, everything else is easy. If you don't dial in rolling, there's a lot of swimming and that's a pain in the ass. So where, you know, as a non-trained instructor, I have no idea really what I'm talking about, but that seems to be my perspective. So where is rolling in your instruction process?
Well, I have to say your perspective is pretty popular among a lot of people. In my teaching style, though, 3-day course, unless you really, really like work it out of me, you're not going to get it. Like, it's not that important.
Interesting.
For me, it's like riding a bike. Like, you know, your mom or your dad doesn't put you on the bike and be like, okay, honey, let me push you off this and you can learn to get back on a bunch of times. And then once you're comfortable with that, then I'm going to teach you how to ride the bike. You know, they teach you three things. They teach you how to balance. They teach you how to steer, and they teach you how to pedal and move your bike somewhere. Right. So that's kind of my style of teaching, is I teach you how to stay upright first so you don't fall over and swim. And then I teach you the controls or the momentum and how to get somewhere. And then the kayaks, they always want to spin. You do anything too fast, too slow, or not at all, and your kayak's going to spin. So then the third thing we do is learn how to control the boat.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know, a lot of people, that's one of their first questions that they will ask me is, are we going to learn to roll first? And it's not, if you don't flip over, it's not needed.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And once you're comfortable with the boat, comfortable paddling, you get your hip control, all that kind of stuff, learning to roll will be a lot easier, I assume, once you've been paddling for a while.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Which, teaching people to roll is like the strangest because, you know, you're upside down and backwards and trying it.
You know. And your eyes are closed.
Yeah. Unless you wear goggles in a pool. That's kind of how I learned. Yeah, I think separating like the lower body from the upper body is something I still struggle with in a lot of like trying to learn how to do certain specific moves downriver. And I remember when I was learning how to roll and when I later was teaching people to roll at OSU, that was like the biggest thing, is even people that were athletes could not separate their lower body from their upper body. So it's like any time their lower body moved, their upper body moved, or their upper body would move and their lower body would move. You're like, no, roll the hips and then do something different with your upper body.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways that people teach rolling as well. So that can be hard too. People I've worked with that teach down at Stanford University, before they even take those guys out on the river, they spend 4 days in a pool.
Yeah. Just
rolling and learning the basics in a pool. And then they go out on the river for like 2-3 days.
Nice. I kind of like that, at least. But I guess when I was learning, I had the benefit of being able to paddle in IK for a number of years. So I wasn't like the river wasn't the thing I was necessarily the most worried about. I was more worried about rolling. So I think for me, my preference would have been to learn how to roll.
You're being stuck in a kayak.
What's that?
Were you more worried about the actual roll or being stuck upside down in a kayak?
I think both. I think thinking back to why it took me so long to want to hard shell, I was more worried about like being stuck in the boat and it being really uncomfortable, because the IKs are so comfortable. And I remember sitting in a kayak one time that was clearly too small for me. And I was like, this is awful. Like, it's so uncomfortable. Why would you ever want to do this? And then it took me like another year to come back to it and be like, okay, like I want to try this, because I like the idea of just when you flip over, you're not gathering your gear. You can roll back up and have it all with you.
Yeah, true that.
Sometimes you're still losing all your gear because you can't roll. But
So I want to get to the question, you know, before we run out of time, this paddle like a girl mentality. I'm not sure if that's your saying or Priscilla's, but if it's yours, you want to kind of explain that?
It's Will's.
Will's, yeah. So Will, you want to go ahead and sort of explain what you mean?
So paddle like a girl. This is something that was taught to me, and I pass it on to pretty much everybody in every single course and every single class, is the river has all the energy in the world and you will never beat it. So why not just use it? And women, I feel like maybe it's just my style of teaching, but in my mind, like women were made for kayaking and kayaking was made for women. Like they are naturally just super good at pretty much everything that guys are bad at. Communication, finesse, multitasking, emotional awareness, self-awareness. There's a lot of different reasons. The way that they're naturally in tune to not using the power that they have and finding the power within the current with the paddle blade. You'll see them pick up on more advanced technique or doing more advanced technique without even being told. And they're also really good. Their natural human instinct is preservation. So they see all the sneak lines in a rapid most of the time before a guy does. Whether it is a technical move or not, you know, doesn't really have to play into it. And where guys are trying to more prove something out of it, a lot of times, not always, they're more apt to try and run straight down the hole or straight down the middle of the rapid or to the biggest part of the rapid, which a lot of times isn't the most technical move on the river because the water pushes you there, so you naturally find yourself there. And I try and teach people to paddle as little as possible as well. So that's my definition of paddling like a girl, is just using the river and paddling as little as possible.
That is, yeah, I like that. I feel like paddling with people, that's always kind of been my mentality of recognizing that generally I'm not as in good a shape as everybody else just because, you know, I live an adult life of kids and all that sort of stuff. So I always paddle as late. I call it laziness, like paddle as lazy as I can. And, you know, it seems to work pretty well. Like, you know, paddle when you have to paddle, but if you don't have to paddle, then just kind of roll with it and make things as easy as you can. Do as little, do as little as you can get away with.
Yeah. That's funny that timely, both of you are saying that. I'm relearning a lot of my paddling technique. And Jacob, fortunately, is teaching me, and he has a similar perspective, and he recently made me, there's this weird boily eddy line on the Brighton Bush that ended in a boo. And I was just like paddling as hard as I could to get across the eddy line and then to the boof. And I kept getting pushed the way I didn't want to. And he's like, okay, so now try it and take, I can't remember the limit of paddle strokes. He's like, just try to take one paddle stroke through the boily stuff and then one paddle stroke to line up for the boof and then one for the boof. And it was the hardest thing for me to do. But then once I learned how to do it, I was such a better paddler on that one drop, and it translated into harder stuff and practicing and just being like, be lazy, as you're saying, Eric, but really just like take as few strokes as you can and use the power of the river and read the water well. And I think that obviously is something that I missed in my learning how to paddle. I think I was paddling like a guy and just trying to power through most things, like lean forward, paddle hard. And changing my perspective on that has certainly helped my paddling technique.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I do call it paddling as lazy as possible, but I've also seen in my instruction that when I say lazy, people will stop caring about their technique.
yeah, that's a fine line. So
that's like a hard, like sometimes I say it, sometimes I don't. I'm trying to like make sure I always say paddle as efficiently.
Efficiently is the right word for sure.
As possible.
I think that's what Jacob said.
I believe in your last podcast, you guys were talking about rowing like a girl, and it's one well-timed stroke, you know, makes up for 8 bad time strokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like one right stroke where you dip part of your boat into an eddy that pulls you across the river can make up, you know, for 20 strokes where you have to paddle against the current to get where you want to go. Like using the functions of the river to pull you around or guide you where you want to be makes things way more efficient.
Yeah. For when I was getting really into high end, trying to do hard kayaking lessons on the North Fork, one of my mentors gave me a challenge is to only take 3 strokes down Juicer Rapid.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the best I got was like 4 or 5.
Yeah, I remember the first time I did the North Fork, we were doing it in playboats, I think. So I don't even think I knew what I was doing. But we were in there and we were just like, me and this other guy were paddling like, we were just terrified and paddling like crazy everywhere we go. It's like, we gotta have speed. We don't want to get stuck in anything, whatever. And the guy we were with comes over and he's just like, hey, just stop paddling. Like, just like brace your way down, paddle as little as you can. Cause if you paddle like you guys are, you're going to get to the bottom and not be able to lift your arms. you're going to get to the big rapids and have zero energy left and just do as little as you can. And so next thing you know, we going through the rapids, it's like, this is way better. Like this, it was a game changer of just efficiency, like so yeah. Much more fun, so much less stressful. Like I remember feeling like it, when you start thinking about efficiency, your whole body kind of unclenches in a sense too. Mm-hmm. You know, you put yourself in a whole different mindset of how to go, which then loosens everything up and actually helps you be more successful because you're loose, your body's loose, your hips are loose, you know, you get comfortable. It's just it changes everything when you're not totally gripped.
Yeah. I think maybe the North Fork is maybe the best example of that. Cause I hear that from everyone. And I know my friend Corey Kellum took me down, Otter Slide, which isn't even the real part of the lower five. And it was the first time I'd seen anything like that. And I was doing the same thing. And he's like, you need to seriously like chill out and like stop paddling so much. And it's kind of the same thing that you're saying, Eric, like you're not going to be able to use your arms once we get to the rapids if you're going to do that.
Yeah. And the thing about Otter Slide is a lot of people let their guard down, and I have been one for this. I've done the same thing as like, oh, Otter Slide, this one's so much fun. And it's not part of the lower five. Oh, it's part of the warm up and awesome beat downs. And I've taken a top to bottom Otter Slide beat down. I broke my
butt. Oh my gosh.
Like all of my, I've had three swims on the North Fork and 2 of them are in Otter Slide.
Dang. Well, yep. That says something about how kayakers view things and how letting your guard down can play out.
Yeah. It may not be the scariest rapid, but
still a big rapid.
But and break your boat.
Yeah. So speaking a little bit more about kayakers progressing, one is, would you recommend, I think I know the answer to this, but would you recommend actual, you know, formal paddling instruction for all new paddlers? And after that, what are the primary tips and tricks you would give that new paddler to try to progress into that next level of their paddling?
Of course, I'm going to say get professional lessons. And it's funny, most people, once they get to class 3, they quit taking lessons as well. And they just kind of pick up tips from their friends who are class 4 kayakers or class 5 kayakers. But take a lesson. It doesn't matter who necessarily you take the lesson from. Just try and stick with that particular program.
Mm-hmm.
If you can actually take a GoPro and record some of the things they say, that's super awesome. Because the things that instructor said to you is going to bring back a memory and a muscle memory as well that's going to help you repeat what you actually did in the lesson. Nice. And then to take your skills and improve them, I say a lot of watching slalom paddling online because there's like a million hours of slalom paddling that's on YouTube. And then I always like the suggestion of going down the rapid backwards because that's when people freak out, is they spin out, they're backwards, oh my gosh. And the truth is, most of your boats go just as well backwards as they do forwards. It's not like you just have rocker on the front of the boat. You have rocker on the back of the boat too. And there's a reason for that.
And what are like the top few things that you would say are the most important to focus on if you're, you know, say you've taken a kayak instruction class and you want to go practice more on your own? Like, would you practice catching eddies? Would you practice certain paddling things? What are the top things that they should keep in mind when they're going down that class 2-3 run practicing things?
Catch as many eddies as possible and do as many ferries at the top of the eddy as possible as well, because the eddy line is the most unstable part of the current. And so if you can get across an eddy line and you can anticipate what's going to happen to your boat before it happens is huge. And anticipating what's going to happen dependent upon the angle of your boat relative to the eddy line is huge. And then just having the confidence to ferry across any current is huge as well. So, and an eddy line and a wave are hydraulically the same exact thing. So if you can get across the eddy line, you can get through a wave.
Hmm. I think those are great tips. All things that I am working on a lot to be better at too.
Oh yeah, me too. It's never ending process.
Yeah. I think something that to add to that list that I've recently learned has helped me a ton is surfing in small waves, just like front surfing. And then if you find one that's sticky enough to do like, you know, 180 in or like flat spins in your, you know, flat spins in your creek boat and rolling over and not, you know, being comfortable rolling back up in it has done a lot for me in terms of being more comfortable with like eddy lines and waves, because I'm like, oh, well, I know I can move my boat around in this feature and I'm not just going to be stuck in here screaming for help type of thing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you know, they're like class 2-3 little front surf waves that I'm talking about. Nothing that's really that scary, but offer a lot of value to figuring out your boat control and balance.
I also think, you know, especially if you're practicing in the eddies, you're probably going to roll on an eddy line.
Yeah.
But practicing rolling in an eddy line is terribly hard.
Yeah. Yes.
And so if you can roll in a good, strong eddy line, you can pretty much roll anywhere.
Yeah. I think that's totally a good, that's a good piece of advice, because a lot of the times when you see, like, if you're doing real river running, that is where you end up swimming, is sort of in like those weird currents and that kind of stuff. And people are missing rolls and whatnot. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Think about like watch people swim on the truss or wherever. It's usually in the places with super weird currents, you know, or really aerated water or really weird eddy lines, you know, and those are the things that get you. But
yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's good advice. Cool. Yeah. Any kind of like last minute thoughts on, you know, kayaking advice, things to think about, major takeaway? If you were to say like, this is the one thing you should listen to this and focus on this to be a better boater going forward, what would it be?
jump all the way into kayaking. Don't just try it. Take like a 5-day lesson. Take a 4-day lesson. Most of the time, if you do that, you're going to understand kayaking and you're going to have the confidence to go out with friends afterwards or acquaintances. If you're like having to use Facebook or something like that, like private instruction, good. 2-day courses, yeah. You know, that's kind of still trying it. But if you do like a 3 or 4 day course, you get so much out of it. And I'm talking 3 or 4 days on the water, not like one night we're talking about kayaking and then we do a couple days of kayaking, like a 4-day course, something that is, you know, you can really grasp it and get all the drills down, and then you can practice those drills by yourself or with friends, you know. That, I think, is a huge thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world to me. I've told people before, like, this isn't even really going to be fun until you've done it for 10 to probably 20 days of real boating is when it starts to actually be fun. Up to then, it's just kind of learning the skill so you have the base foundation to go out and have a good time.
Yeah.
I think that's great advice. If you're going to do it, go all the way.
Yeah. You're not going to die. You're going to learn how to focus. You're going to learn a lot of new skills, and you're going to meet a lot of really awesome people and make a lot of new friends.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Well, should we move over to Gear Corner? This is where we like to talk about, you know, every week we talk about either a piece of gear or, you know, it could be really just about anything that we think is cool or caught our attention. So, Priscilla, do you have a gear of the week?
Yes.
Please tell me this is not what you say it is going to be. I'm so disappointed by this.
You are disappointed because you haven't tried them yet. My gear of the week is Crocs because they're awesome. And you can bring them on overnighters, and they're way better than flip-flops when you have to walk around on slippery rocks. And wait for it, you can wear socks with your Crocs. And it is an incredible post-kayaking shoe that you can also wear out without tying anything or
Unbelievably fashionable. You look really good with your Crocs and socks.
They even have camo ones and pink
ones. Instagram after this. Socks and Crocs.
First hashtag.
Yeah.
They are super awesome. I am not the only one who thinks that. There's lots of people that do, and I tend to hang out with them. And yeah, people just need to embrace them because the functionality is supreme.
Awesome. Will, do you have a, we're just going to move on from there. Will, do you have any gear of the week?
So my gear of the week is pretty new and I've been using it quite a bit lately, but it's called FiberFlex.
Hmm. What is it?
It's hilarious. It looks almost like carpenter's tape or something, but what you can do is it's perfect to have in your like overnight kit, or if you're going somewhere crazy, it's really great to have this like extra paddle. Right. Instead of having your extra paddle, you can actually bring FiberFlex, which you will be able, it's water activated. So all you have to do is dip it in the water and then you can wrap it around your paddle. You could fix a broken boat. You can do amazing things with this stuff. And it's super strong. It seems ridiculous, but look it up on YouTube. FiberFlex, you can fix a paddle, you can fix about anything, and it only takes 15 minutes for it to set and you're good to go.
Awesome.
That sounds rad. So what is it? Waterproof repair tape. Cool.
It's like a tape that you wrap around that hardens up. You could even use it in an emergency situation. If somebody broke their arm, broke their leg, you could use it to make a cast as long as you weren't attaching it directly to the skin. Don't do that. But it hardens, and it's basically like, I mean, the commercial says it's as hard as steel, but
is there a, is it a water activated resin that's in the stuff? So you're just putting water on it to have it harden up.
You're just putting water on it, and then you can wrap it around the paddle, the frame. You could put it, so if you like cracked your boat, you could put it on the bottom of your boat to like kind of hold it together instead of just having like the duct tape on the outside. Is like it would actually form up like a cast, and then your boat crack would be like together. And you could weld it or melt it or glue it, seal it together. And I just saw they came out with a light, this like weird UV activated super glue stuff. So it's a new company that just came out. I highly suggest all the boaters look into it because I think it's going to be a huge game changer.
Awesome.
Yeah, it looks like it's just rolled up gauze, like, is what it kind of, it sort of has an appearance of like a gauze on a roll that, yeah, it looks like it just gets rock hard. That's cool. I'm going to order some today.
I think I have used that before. I used it for a paddle repair. It works really well.
Cool.
Yeah, I could see people using it on the blade of the paddle as well, like all over the place.
Yeah.
Cool. So. My gear of the week is the vest, the fleece vest for under your dress suit.
Nice.
You know, there's like, I don't like having really like lots of material out of my arms under my dry suit, especially kayaking, because I feel like it just adds more stuff you're having to move around when you're trying to roll or whatever else, and adds resistance against your shoulders and everything else. And I just tend to get too hot. But fleece vest in under my dry suit, my arms are free, less weight out wide. And, you know, not quite as hot, but still get that core part of my body warmed up. I have one of those old mountain hardware windstopper fleece vests that I use because it's a light fleece. But I, you know, instead of having like the big fleece or kind of the full arm covering layers, I'm a big fan of having my second layer on top of, you know, whatever my thin base layer is, fleece vest. It's a good way to go.
I can see promoting like a Farmer John fleece then too.
Yeah, totally. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Like the Farmer John like onesie deal would be rad. I would be super.
I'd buy that.
Yeah. Immersion Research folks, designers, if you're listening.
Yep.
Farmer John.
Yep. Max.
There we go. Cool. Well, that was kind of all the things for this week, I think. So unless you guys have any other last minute items.
No.
Cool. Well, hey, Will, thanks for coming on the pod and giving us your expertise. We appreciate it. It was great listening to you. If you're listening, thanks for hanging out. Hopefully you're headed to the river or back from the river, getting out there, enjoying some of these rivers that are spiking up. If you liked us, go to where you listen to podcasts, rate us, tell your friends, all that kind of fun stuff, because apparently it does something. You can find links from today's show on our website at therivertalkpodcast.com. And we'll see you next week. Go boating.